Welcome to the Balance Babes podcast. I'm Kim Perez.
I'm Amanda Montalvo.
And we are functional nutritionists trained in a holistic, integrative approach to health and are founders of the Balance Babe Method and Facebook group.
We are on a mission to help women learn how to nourish their bodies, balance their hormones, and feel good in their skin.
Because we've both dealt with our own health struggles, we are passionate about helping women become more in tune with their bodies and eliminate hormonal imbalances naturally through food, lifestyle habits, mindset, and targeted supplements tailored to each woman.
We believe in the importance of intention, the power of intuition, and the value of prioritizing self-care. And we're here to empower all women.
Before we get started, we want to remind you that we are not your doctor, and the content shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. Please chat with your doctor before making any changes.
Hey, it's Amanda. Quick question for you. What kind of deodorant do you use? My absolute favorite non-toxic deodorant is the Blue Tansy deodorant from Primally Pure. I gift it to all of my clients, and I've gotten both of my sisters hooked on it. And I hear the same thing from everyone. Oh my gosh, it actually works and doesn't irritate my skin. I've tried at least 15 non-toxic deodorants, and while some of them definitely work better than others, none of them compare to Primally Pure, especially the Blue Tansy one. Not only do they avoid harmful ingredients like aluminum, fragrance, and different hormone disruptors, but it won't irritate your skin and it lasts all day. You can grab your own at primallypure.com and make sure you use the code BBP to get 10% off your first order. Hey everyone, it's Amanda Montalvo here. I'm an integrative dietitian and one half of the Balance Babe podcast. And with me today, I have Jenna Longoria, aka the Period Guru. Jenna is a certified women's health and functional nutrition coach specializing in hormone health. She was listed by the Huffington Post as one of the top 20 new health writers to follow in 2017. Her work has been featured in Mind Body Green, NBC, and the Elephant Journal, and she is the author of 7 Steps to a Healthier You, an Attainable Guide to Health. Jenna helps women reclaim their hormones by working with them to achieve pain-free, regular periods and optimize their fertility. Through her private practice, she helps women balance their hormones with functional nutrition, diagnostic testing, and lifestyle changes. Jenna is a firm believer that the right diet can put any hormonal condition into remission. Thank you so much for being with us today, Jenna.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Me too. To get started, we're going to focus on ovulation today, but I first want to ask you just a few icebreaker questions so that our listeners can get to know you better. So the first one is, what is your morning routine?
My morning routine. Oh my goodness. My morning routine. And if you try to mess it up, I'll be very upset. I get so thrown off if I don't have my morning routine. I don't know about you, but, first thing I do is I wake up and I have my warm lemon water with turmeric and black pepper. And then I have a little candle I light and I, you know, say my morning prayer and I write in my journal and just have quiet. It's super important. So I try to get up before my husband so I have that quiet time.
I love that. Wonderful routine that's like sustainable. You know, it doesn't have to be super fancy. I think that is the key for morning routines.
Exactly, right? Everyone has water and, you know, you and a journal. I think journaling is so great for just unloading your thoughts and also just kind of manifesting what you want to see for the day. It makes me just feel, it just grounds me.
Yeah, sets the tone for the day. I journal every single morning, even if it's just like for 1 minute, it changes everything. That's like, there's that quote, it's like journaling is like whispering to your soul.
I love that. That's so beautiful. And also writing your dreams. So when I remember my dreams, I like to write that down. And I was reading in Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Dr. Christiane Northrup. And she was saying, give titles to your dreams. And I thought that was really cool. So like, kind of like if it was a movie, so then you can summarize it. So in my journal, I like, I'll give titles to my dreams and write about them. And it's super cool to kind of flip back and see what was going on in my life at that time. Like, oh yeah, that makes so much sense why I was having that dream.
Oh my God, I need to do that. Yeah, my younger sister used to keep like a dream journal. Like she had a separate one just for that. That's a good idea in giving titles. That's cute. Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, so what is your current Netflix binge show or just like a favorite that you have?
Oh my gosh, it's my guilty pleasure, girl. So whenever I have a moment and I just need like some self-care and just quiet, Grey's Anatomy. And I've seen them all and I rewatched them.
I love that. I've actually never watched Grey's Anatomy, but I hear about it a lot, like on shows or in podcasts or like even just women that I follow, you know, like they'll talk about it. And I'm like, that is like one I need to put on my list.
Oh, it's great.
I feel like there's so many seasons. It's like intimidating.
Oh my God, there's like 15. It's insane. And so you go back and forth and it's like the new one. And she's, you know, quite, you know, she's aged a bit and she's still beautiful. But then I go back into the first one. I'm like, oh my gosh, she's like, it's weird to see that, you know, 15 years later.
Oh my God, that's kind of real and everything. That's really funny. Okay, so Grey's Anatomy, good one. What is your preferred form of exercise or movement? And we were just talking about this.
Probably. Yes. Oh my gosh. I've been an Ashtanga yoga practitioner for, I've had a daily practice for 6 years now. And I just love it. It's beautiful. It's, you know, like we were saying, a moving meditation. It's a physical prayer, basically. So, and that's part of my morning routine. So I do that every morning, except when I'm menstruating, I take a break.
I love that. And moving prayer, that is exactly like the perfect way to describe it. So I recently started doing Ashtanga yoga and I'm obsessed. So I'm sure that everyone will be hearing about that. Maybe we'll have Jenna on to do a whole podcast about Ashtanga yoga and the benefits and how to get started. Cause I think it can be intimidating. But I'm doing a 2-week intro course now, so I'm pumped. Everyone, check it out if you're wanting a yoga practice that you can also do on your own at home. Okay, last one. What is one thing about you that people would be surprised to know?
Okay. One thing about me they'd be surprised to know. That's a hard one. Well, I guess... I was a vegan vegetarian for almost a decade.
That's surprising.
And I started when I was like 14 because I read the book Fast Food Nation, because every 14-year-old picks that up, like no big deal. and I read that and it just terrified me. And so I gave up meat. And I didn't do it the healthy way in the beginning, obviously, because I was 14 in Texas. And
yep.
Without meat on the plate, it's not a meal, you know?
Yeah.
Because you live in Texas, you kind of understand that mentality. Yeah. But now I'm an omnivore.
I love it.
A year and a half ago, I'm now an omnivore.
That is definitely surprising. You know what book got me? So I think a lot of women go through a phase of trying out like vegetarian or veganism. I did it in high school, but it was more related to restricting my food intake because like many young girls, I was trying to like manipulate my body. And I read the book Skinny Bitch. Have you read that book?
I haven't read it, but my roommate in college was obsessed with that book.
I wish no one ever gave me that book. One of my friends read it and I was like, I want to be skinny. And then it basically tells you to cut out animal products. So.
Oh, does it in that book? Okay. I know it was talking about like, because I remember my roommate was like, yeah, there's like these skinny margaritas. And I was like, okay.
And they go through that. But they also, like one of the big themes of the book is that you cut out animal products.
Okay.
But basically it's a way to cut out calories, which is what I was trying to do, which is not healthy. So.
No, definitely not.
That made me think of it.
That's so funny. And I think like a lot of things is because I felt so much better on the vegetarian diet. I mean, I was vegan and vegetarian first, then it became vegan, which a lot of people do. It's like you go, but I think it's cutting out the dairy is what makes most people feel so phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And they get better. But then generally from what I see, and I don't know if you see this in your practice as well, is after a while they start to get, you know, health consequences, you know, can mess up with their ovulation, with their periods, everything. So.
Yeah, I see. It's the nutrient deficiencies.
Definitely.
Like that's like what it is. It's like your body can withstand it for so long, but eventually, and then like you have to supplement so much more. So it's,
you do. And not everyone does that. Like it is hard work to be a vegan. You have to supplement.
you have to be so mindful with every meal and everything. Not that you shouldn't be that way anyway, but I just feel like it's a lot less like room for error. But yeah, I definitely, we see that. We have a lot of women in our Balanced Babe Facebook group, and they like are vegetarian or vegan, and like they're seeing issues, and they're kind of coming for like supplement and stuff recommendations. And that's when we're like, you might need to reevaluate your diet. Does it mean that you need to eat meat every day? You know, like everyone is super different, but trying to figure out why you couldn't digest the meat in the first place and, you know, getting to the root of all that stuff. But that's very interesting. I'm glad that you shared that, because I think that sometimes we, as practitioners, we don't want to like mention like all the stupid stuff that we did back in the day.
So. Well, it was also really hard for me because I wrote a lot of articles about vegan health and vegan recipes and why it's the best thing for you, because I had so much success in the beginning. And you know how it is on like Instagram or whatever, you know, you get, you know, vegans were following me. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, well, I'm an omnivore because I found out it works better with my body type. I needed healing. I had some issues and I started incorporating some grass-fed meats and, you know, in small quantities. And I felt better. And I was like, I have to share. If I just lie and say I'm still vegan, that's fake. And that's not helping anyone. Like, I'm here to share our, you know, what trial and error, right? And so I was really nervous to make my first post. I had like a collagen powder or something like that. And it's just like, oh, I got so much hate.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
No, transition. I'm so proud that you did that. That is not easy. I didn't realize it was like so night and day, you know, like clear to people that you were like strictly vegan and now you're not, you know?
Yeah. So it was like a transition. It was probably like 6 months of, you know, until I started, you know, writing about it and just posted something and it was like, hey, you know, like this is, you know, because did you see about that food blogger that it went viral, right?
Yeah, I saw that she was like caught eating like salmon or meat or something.
Yeah. And it's because her period went away. And so she said, well, this is what happened. My period went away and I started incorporating some animal products. And that really irritated me. So it's like, you know what? People follow you. They look up to you. They get food advice from you. Maybe they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But if you were experiencing this health challenge, you should have shared that with people because people might benefit from your experience. Maybe if she got her period back by adding in some animal products, you know, like instead of staying to this ideology, because obviously she was probably making a lot of money with this vegan identity, this vegan brand she had.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And that is like why influencers are a very like gray area. And it's like, you have to be really careful who you follow, who you take your advice from, and just like making sure that they're like a qualified source. Cause if it's someone just sharing lifestyle stuff, it's like, then they very well could be holding stuff like that back. And it's like, technically it's their brand, their business. So it's just like, it's a very tricky line, but I did see that. And hopefully now that it all came out, like maybe some women will start to think like, oh, like my periods have been weird too. Maybe I should consider adding in animal products. But periods are having their moment right now. And
I know.
And I'm so happy that, you know, women are like, I feel like it's starting to get normalized. Obviously in the world that we live in, you know, we see it a lot more. If you take us out of that world, when I'm in society, like it's not quite seen as much, but I still think it's being talked about a lot more, which is awesome. You know, like periods, cycles, women talking about like getting their periods, if they use a menstrual cup versus tampons versus period underwear. Like, I feel like it's, the conversation is happening, and the kind of next place that we feel the conversation should go is ovulation. Because that, you know, if you're getting a period, like that's really the goal. That's why periods are important, right? Is because we need to ovulate. And so that's our goal today, is to talk about ovulation, why it's so important, and why we feel like it should be really highlighted as part of the period.
Yes, I love it. I love talking about ovulation.
So why is ovulation so important for women's health?
Ovulation is how we make the hormone progesterone, which is super important. I mean, it nourishes our hair, our thyroid, our nails, our metabolism. It gives us our bone density. So if we're not ovulating, they're showing that women lose bone density quite quickly, which, you know, if you're on the birth control pill for a decade and you're not ovulating, then that can, you know, present some serious issues in the integrity of your bones and leading to osteoporosis, you know, as we age. So we need this progesterone desperately. It's nature's chill pill. It's literally nature's chill pill. If we don't have enough of it, we can get anxiety, we can get depression. And the only way we make it is by ovulating. So, I mean, there's a little bit in our adrenals, I believe, but the majority of our progesterone is from ovulation. So if we're not ovulating and we're just having a bleed, then we're not making this magical hormone that, I love how Dr. Laura Brighton, you know, she's like, it makes us superwoman.
Yes.
Our superhero power.
Exactly. And so we need progesterone. It's the chill pill hormone. It allows us to feel good in that calmness. And so sometimes yes. that can be like a sign, like if you're really anxious or especially like the second half of your cycle, then you may not be ovulating each month. And we're going to talk about some reasons why women don't ovulate, but I'm so glad that you mentioned hormonal birth control, because I think that even with a period discussion, a lot of women that take hormonal birth control, like the pill, IUD, you don't really like bleed very often, but with the pill, like you bleed every month. But the thing is, it's not a true period. It's like a pill bleed. It's that withdrawal bleed. Mm-hmm. So even though you're bleeding every month on the pill, you're still not ovulating because it shuts down your hormones. Yeah. So I think that's important to mention in case someone listening is like, well, I bleed every month. Like, am I actually ovulating?
And that's a tricky thing too, because you can't not notice a period bleed. You know, you have to do something about it. You need to use a menstrual cup or period panties. But ovulation, not everyone has middle schmerz. Not everybody feels that ovulation pain, twinge. And not everyone ovulates. It's kind of invisible unless you're looking for the fertility signs.
Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what I want to talk about next. So when, this is something that I get asked a lot, is like, when do you ovulate? Like, when does it usually happen for women? And how can you tell?
Yes, that's such a great question. And, every woman is different. So ovulation is one of those things that doesn't, you know, it's not the stereotypical 14 day of a 28 day cycle. So, you know, if you're actively trying to avoid pregnancy, or on the other end, if you're trying to get pregnant and you're just going by the apps that have the ovulation predictors, no app can tell you, you can predict when you're going to ovulate. It's just impossible. So if you're just going by 14, then you might not get pregnant because you might ovulate on day 19 or you might ovulate on day 7. So some women ovulate very early, some tend to ovulate late. And then there's things like stressors, whether it be emotional, physical, environmental, that can delay ovulation or completely or can cause you to have an anovulatory cycle, which is where you don't ovulate that cycle, but you can still have a period. So there's a lot of different factors in it. And it's just, I guess, you know, genetics, like we all have our beautiful rhythms within our bodies and we're all different. So it just, you know, depends. And that's why it's so great to, you know, chart your cycles. So you get to know your rhythm. You get to kind of know your pattern.
Yeah. And I do want to, and we're going to talk about the fertility awareness method a little bit, because that's really what we're talking about. If you want to know when you ovulate, ovulation is when we're fertile, right? So
yeah.
Women usually have about a 6-day fertile window each month, which means we can't get pregnant every day of the month, which yeah. not what we're usually taught. I swear to God, I was like, why do I take a pill every day if I can't get pregnant every day, right?
So I know, we're actively, we're using pregnancy prevention every day of the month with hormonal birth control when we're actually only fertile, really, like the egg can survive when you ovulate, the egg gets released for 24 hours to 48 hours. But yeah. we are fertile like 6 to 8 days of the month because the cervical fluid
exactly
keep that egg, can keep the sperm alive. So we're not fertile every day. Oh my gosh, when I learned that, I was like, oh wow.
I was so mad. I don't know about you, but I was so mad. And I was like, wait a minute, men are fertile every single day of yeah. their lives, basically. And women are only fertile for like a week, a month. You know, it's just interesting, but it's good to know. And hopefully if we're blowing your mind right now, you keep listening and this intrigues you. Because this is how I got into fertility awareness method. When I started looking for an alternative to the pill, because I was like, this is insane. I was like in school learning about nutrient deficiencies caused by hormonal birth control. Wow. And I was like, no one ever taught me this. You know,
it's crazy. Like, and they even have a birth control pill. Bayer makes a birth control pill that has folic acid in it.
Yeah.
Because the birth control pill, or I think, I don't even know if it's folate or folic acid. It's probably folic acid that, but because they know that the birth control pill depletes mm-hmm. folate in the body.
Yep.
So if they're putting that in the pill, then they know that it depletes it. And that's just one of the many nutrients.
Yes.
It depletes. Exactly. But knowing when you ovulate, you know, there are three fertility signs. So some women experience something called middle schmerz, which is like a pain, like a twinge in their ovary, that should only last up to like an hour or two. It shouldn't, if it's, you know, painful for longer than that, then there could be an issue. Cervical fluid. So fertile cervical fluid is generally, it's like that. It looks like that, the part of the clear part of an egg white, and it stretches between the fingers. So if you ever get a glob of that on your panties, you're not dying. Yes. It's normal. It's cervical fluid, and that's what carries the sperm to fertilize the egg. And generally it's symmetrical, like on your panties, when it will leave like a symmetrical kind of pattern. It's different than, you know, than other fluids in that aspect, because the symmetry and also the temperature shift. So if you use a thermometer after you ovulate, then you start making progesterone because you're in the luteal phase of your cycle, and that progesterone will cause your body to, you know, run on a higher temperature, and that sustained temperature shift will last until the first day of your menstrual cycle.
Yes. And so basically this is the fertility awareness method, you know, like you pay attention to these fertility signs. Those are like the two really big ones. And then of course, if you feel yourself ovulating, that can definitely be a sign. But as far as like how it works is I always try to recommend tracking at least cervical mucus and basal body temperature, because like the mucus helps you predict ovulation, right? Because you see the changes leading up to it. Mm-hmm. Like Jenna was saying with the egg white texture, that's fertile mucus. So, and that's because that mucus can pretty much carry the sperm and help them be even healthier and live longer inside of your vagina. And then that's how you can get pregnant, like the days leading up to the one day that you ovulate. So it helps you predict ovulation, and then your temperature helps you confirm it. And I think that is really important, you know, like whether you are trying to get pregnant or not, or if you're just using this to become more like in tune with your body and body literate, as a lot of people like to call it, which I love, like you can absolutely use it for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yes, I agree.
Okay. So as far as, how it getting like tracking your fertility and the ovulation, mm-hmm. how do you recommend women get started with that?
So getting started, definitely first place is download an app on your phone. We're so blessed nowadays. I mean, you know, I'm taking charge of fertility. You know, Terry Walshler has the graph in the back, and women who used to chart their cycles had to use the graph, which you still can, which I think is still beautiful to like for a cycle or two to take a pen to paper and chart your cycle. But nowadays we have apps on our phones, so it's so convenient. We really have no excuse. Everyone can have download an app and enter the first day of their period and keep track of it that way. So download an app. I like Kindara. I know you're a fan of Flow. Mm-hmm. There's so many out there to choose from, and get a thermometer. It doesn't have to be an expensive thermometer. That's one of the things I get from clients. Oh, I haven't bought a thermometer yet because it's so expensive. I'm like, no, start. This is like, it's like a juicer. When you go out and get a juicer, you're not going to get like the $800 juicer, right? Because you might not juice. And then you just have this $800 juicer. So you get the cheap one first. And if you use it for a while, then you graduate to an expensive one. So that's why I see like, go to Walgreens, get a $20 thermometer, and start with that, and put your, you know, temperature into the app every day. There's a place like on Kindara, you can record your temperature every day, and you get to see your graph, and you'll see that temp spike that happens post ovulation.
I love that. And yes, like I agree with the thermometer thing. Like there are some really fancy tools out there now because this is becoming more talked about. I think the whole natural holistic movement is big and people are seeing that there's a need for it, which is amazing, mm-hmm. but don't let that stop you. Like I use a Daisy now, but when I first started this, there were no apps. Okay. No apps that attract your basal body temperature. So I printed out, there's a great book called Taking Charge of Your Fertility that Jenna mentioned. And I got that book. And then there's charts that you can actually download for free online. If you search that book and then you if you put into Google taking charge of your fertility charts, you can download the PDF versions for free online or Excel versions. I don't know why, I guess either way. And you can print off the PDF ones if you want. And I did that for about a year and then the Daisy came out and I was like, just kidding, I'm gonna use this. But I do think that charting that way on paper taught me a lot. So if you're someone that's like, okay, like I'm intimidated by technology, which I get plenty of women that are definitely intimidated by technology, get the paper, like Google that, print them off, get the cheap thermometer. I would just say, like, I don't know how you feel about this, but I say try to get one that has a memory that will save some, at least like 60 days of your readings, just in case you forget in the morning. Cause it's really, you do it first thing in the morning before you get up. So it is really easy to like look at that number and then be like, I don't remember what that number was, like when you're tracking it like an hour later or something like that.
Yeah. And it's really great because you can share, you can export them as a PDF and share them with your practitioner. Because going into your practitioner with your charts is very beneficial when you're going in for, you know, talking about your health and any hormone imbalance you might be having.
That is such a good point. And this is something that we see a lot with clients because, like, say you have an irregular period or you have some sort of hormonal concern, like you think it has to do with your cycle and you want something like a specific test done. When you have data like this, I feel like it changes your whole appointment with your doctor.
Absolutely. And you know how they like the quantitative data. That's how they run. You know, they roll. So if you bring the charts in, they're gonna be like, oh, a chart, you know, here's this and here's that, because the more information you can bring to them, the better.
Yes. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, cause that's such a good point. So like having that information and just having, you know, knowing what like symptoms you're having, I think is really important. Like in those apps, you can track them. When you start tracking your ovulation, this is kind of what I'm hoping women can understand. So you want to keep track of your cervical mucus, right? And you can put that right into the app. Like you can put like a wet day or a dry day. And there's a lot of nuance in cervical mucus. I'm just going to say that. So I think if you want to learn more about that, there's a really great book called The Fifth Vital Sign. And
yes,
she has a whole chapter on cervical mucus.
Blew my mind. I love that chapter.
Oh, it's just like, it's really important. So there's a lot of differences, but kind of just understanding that your cervix is like, when it's open and flowing and there's mucus coming out, it's likely considered a fertile day. And on a dry day, it's likely not. But you want to confirm ovulation with taking your temperature. So I get a lot of questions about the temperature stuff. Mm-hmm. When do you take it? How do you take it? And like, what can impact your temperature?
Yeah. So to confirm ovulation, it's really, you know, if you're using it as your form of birth control, it's really important to take it first thing in the morning before you get out of bed. So make it a routine. So I put it on my alarm. So when my alarm goes off, I turn the alarm off, I get my thermometer, put it in my mouth and wait. If you drink anything, you know, it could mess up your reading. If you get up and move around, it could mess up your reading. Drinking alcohol the night before can mess up your reading. Also getting up at different times. So generally I think it's like your temperature increases by a tenth of a degree every hour that you sleep in. So, you know, that's why it's really important just to kind of see your pattern over a few months. So if you, you know, on a Saturday morning, generally, if I have a temp spike, I sleep in on Saturday mornings because I don't practice yoga. I sleep in a little bit. So my temperature might be higher, but it doesn't mean I ovulate it, you know? So you just have to use a little bit of, you know, have a little bit of a, I can't think of the word right now, discretion with the readings. But, that's why if you're using it to confirm ovulation, especially if you're using it to prevent pregnancy, you want to have at least three high, sustained high temperatures in a row. And then you're like, okay, definitely ovulated. This is the progesterone. I'm in my luteal phase and the high temperatures are being sustained. So I generally go for the rule of 3 days in a row because it's not something you want to play around with if you're trying to avoid pregnancy. So.
Exactly. So it's usually like three high days in a row and three high days that are higher than the previous six temperatures.
Yes, yes, by two tenths of a degree.
Yes, and that's why you use the basal thermometer because it does go to like two decimal places, and sometimes it will round up. But yeah, that's how you confirm ovulation. So that's how this works to prevent pregnancy. I get a lot of women that are like, I can't do that. Like that's not that's not going to do it for me. You know, like they're too nervous. And it's really, you just have to be more careful, obviously, leading up to ovulation. But once you confirm it, you cannot get pregnant after that.
No, absolutely not. And you know, especially women, you know, I get it. It can be scary when you're first getting into this, which is why it's great to find a practitioner who can support you through this. You know, if you a fertility awareness educator or someone familiar with it, if you can, the fifth vital sign, as you said, is a great resource for learning about the fertility awareness method. And then eventually with the Daisy thermometer or the Ava bracelet, I love how it kind of does a lot of the work for you, but I encourage women to still chart their cycles, because you're still establishing this connection with your body when you're charting your cycles and you're putting in notes like, recording about your mood or your energy or any food cravings, how you're feeling. It's such an intimate connection and makes you so much more body aware and know when something's off. So like if you have low thyroid, your temperature readings might be lower than they previously were, or you can tell if you have, other health issues by your luteal phase. Like if you're having a short luteal phase, and you might be low on progesterone, you might have some estrogen dominance. Or alternatively, if you're trying to, maybe conceiving, having a baby is in the future, and your luteal phase is only like 8 days, well, you really want to build that luteal phase up to at least 10 days before you start trying, because you need to have the right environment. That's a whole other subject going into pregnancy, but it can tell you so much about your health very quickly, very quickly. It's one of the first barometers to see like, oh, something might be going on, or my energy levels are feeling low. I wonder why. Generally your charts are going to show you, because your period is your fifth vital sign and it's your monthly report card. So it's going to point you in the right direction. If something's wrong, it's your body's way of saying like, hey, something's wrong with the environment, the food you're eating, the way you're living. Maybe you're not practicing enough self-care, and sometimes we have things like that are out of our control, obviously, because, not everything in our life is in our control. So most things are not in our control, like a move or death of a loved one or, an accident, a car accident. So, I was in a car accident a few months ago and I geeked out. It was so interesting because I was actually set to ovulate on the day of the car accident. And the car accident was really frightening. And my ovulation was delayed by 2 weeks. And I was geeking out. I was like, see, like stressors can cause you to delay ovulation. I was like, I was supposed to ovulate today, a full 2 weeks later. Now, because I do fertility awareness method, I knew I didn't need to take a pregnancy test. I knew I wasn't pregnant.
Yeah.
And it's just very, and it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful tool for us to have.
I love that. And it really, so basically the reason why we're so excited about this method and tracking your ovulation using the fertility awareness method is because you get signals like communication from your body constantly, but it's really hard to like pay attention to all of those, right? And like fully understand them in the moment. So if you use this method, you can go back and look like, oh man, my last cycle was, 30 days and usually they're 28. It's like, you can go look at like, what was that month like, what was your life like? I think it's great information for you. And even though it might not always feel like super valid in the moment, I think it's like trying to zoom out and look at the bigger picture, and it helps you do that. So if you're already tracking your periods, that's awesome, but you definitely want to consider like checking, are you ovulating? Because if you have like, maybe you have really bad PMS, or like really strong, like maybe you have I get a lot of people with migraines and headaches around their periods, stuff like that.
Or ovulation headache. Yeah. Those are huge. I get a lot of those. And so it's like, the migraine headaches with ovulation. So I'm like, okay, well, when are you ovulating? And a lot of times they might not know. So then we start charting their cycles and they're like, oh my gosh, my headaches are happening always around ovulation.
And it could be that shift in hormones, but if we're not paying attention and keeping track of these things, it's really hard to make a pattern out of it. It's almost like when you're trying to figure out, like if you are sensitive to a certain food, so maybe you do like an elimination diet and you add stuff in and you like keep track, of how the different foods make
you feel.
It's similar to that, and it helps you see these patterns. So I love that. And I love like and a couple other things I just want to summarize for people, because that was a lot of really good information. The temperature thing. So you take it first thing in the morning before you get out of bed. Yes. If you don't, like, this is one thing I hear a lot of women get hung up on, is like they're scared of having to do that, number one. And they're worried because that so many things, like you mentioned, can impact your temperature. Like you were saying, like sleep, getting up at night, alcohol, foods you're eating, stress, you know, all those things can change our body temperature, which number one is very interesting, I feel like, because it's typically measuring our metabolism is like what that temperature is measuring. So if someone, like, even if it's not perfect, like, do you typically recommend that they still do it and just make note of if they drank the night before, you know?
Yeah, or absolutely. And, you know, so I do not think anyone should use it as a form of birth control until they've been charting for at least, I mean, three cycles.
Yeah.
Three cycles, because you can start seeing your pattern, catch any, you know, it's an indicator. If you have any thyroid, you know, issues or PCOS or any hormone imbalances like that. So 3 months in a row, and then you can kind of see the pattern of your cycle. And then you can know, okay, well, yeah, when, you know, on Saturday mornings, my temperature is higher, or on Thursday mornings, I have to go to work super early, so my temperature is super low. It doesn't necessarily mean my thyroid's not working well, but it's just because I'm waking up so early and it's lower than the other readings. So it's finding that your own kind of, you know, pattern. Mm-hmm. But there are bracelets, like the Ava bracelet. And I believe that the Ava bracelet takes your temperature. So for this is really good for people, maybe like shift workers. So it takes your temperature over the course of the night. So it's getting like your average temperature reading. So people that maybe wake up at different times of the night, or because they're shift workers, or you know, maybe they have children that get up in the night, any circumstances like that. It's getting your average temperature throughout the night. So that's also a really good option.
That's a good point too. So in the Ava bracelet, it's not technically like your basal body. It's more of like an average, right? And yes. It's okay, because you can still see changes with it. I still say maybe go with the Daisy and do the basal body if you're using it for birth control. And Ava, they even say that it's like really more for like getting pregnant and like fertility. I think that's like typically how they market it, I believe. I have specifically seen I've seen them respond to comments on their Instagram, mm-hmm. or like if an influencer is like sharing their product, I've seen them comment on it saying that it is for pregnancy.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay.
I mean, maybe it's not now. That was probably like 6 months ago, but
it probably is, and also they have to cover their bases as well. I mean, yeah. So I mean, but I'm sure the Daisy is 99.6% effective, which is amazing. So, and I love it that it makes it easy. So you get the light every morning, you know, the green light means go, red light means don't, depending on the setting you have it on. But it still takes a few cycles to establish that rhythm and get to know you.
Yes.
Which is why charting your own cycles in tandem on the app will give you so much insight.
Yes. And really, and the only thing that I have a hard time with, because I've been using my Daisy for 3 years now, I need to get the new one, the Bluetooth one. I haven't gotten it yet. I have like the old one that you have to plug into your phone. The only thing that I have a hard time with is that, yes, it gives you the light in the morning, so it's very easy. So if you are someone that is nervous and feels like this is a lot, like, can you really do all this? Like, you definitely can, especially using a Daisy. But you kind of get detached from what the actual number, the temperature number is. So I do recommend if you use it, like, go back and look at your temperatures, you know, like, see the differences. And, like, that's the thing. Like, you could put notes in on there. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I still use the Flow app because I like just easily selecting, you know, the symptoms, similar with Kendara. Like, you can just go in and select symptoms instead of feeling like you have to write everything out. But I think that's important to do too. And that's why charting, like you mentioned in the beginning, can be so helpful, because you really get to know everything and you actually see like what your temperatures are, you know, like, and are, especially if maybe you have a history of thyroid stuff in your family and you're like wanting to get a baseline of what your basal body temperature is, or you have hypothyroid, it's a great thing to look at. So hopefully that helps everyone kind of get started and just learn more about fertility awareness and ovulation and why it's so important. We need progesterone, super important. So even if you don't want to get pregnant or avoid getting pregnant, you still want to track it. The last thing that I wanted to talk about is why might a woman not be ovulating? So say a woman starts to track her ovulation. She's starting to look at her cervical mucus. She's taking her temperature. And I've seen this happen a lot where it's like their temperatures are all over the place. It's like crazy up in their minds. There's no pattern. Like, why might that be?
Yeah. So just before we go into that, and it correlates with it, the LH surge, because that kind of sounds like what you're talking about on the chart. Earlier, we were talking about ways to predict ovulation, and LH strips are sometimes used to predict the ovulation is about to happen when you get that luteinizing hormone spike. But for women with PCOS, that will not work because they tend to get LH surges all throughout the month. So LH strips can be used as a way to confirm to predict ovulation, but I wouldn't just bank on just the LH strips. Use it in tandem with the other methods that we just spoke about. So things that could be causing us not to ovulate. Stress is the biggest one. Stress. I mean, and there's so many different types of stress. It's not just like, oh, I have an exam in a few days type of stress. There's emotional stress. There's environmental stressors. I mean, there's 80,000 chemicals out there, you know, bombarding us every day in the water we drink and the air that we breathe. And there are physical stressors. So there's a lot of, we're bombarded with stress all throughout our life. And these can impact our ovulation. So basically our bodies will always prioritize survival over fertility. Always. So if our body, if our ovaries sense that our environment is not conducive to raising a baby, that we're not in a safe environment, then it shuts down. We won't ovulate because that's our body's way. It's pretty clever of protecting ourselves. Like, okay, you know, maybe there's not enough food. That's why a lot of times women that are over dieting, that's a big one, or over exercising, they'll stop ovulating because their body fat goes, their BMI drops too low. And so their body is getting the signal, hey, like there's a famine. We cannot feed a baby right now. So, you know, ovulation shuts down. And then there is, you know, emotional stressors. So things that happen in a life, like, you know, maybe the death of a loved one or a divorce or something upsetting. And then, you know, moving, you know, across country or moving houses or travel, even though it's fun, your body perceives travel as a type of stressor, especially with jet lag if you're crossing a lot of time zones. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, the car accident I had, you know, that was really frightening. My whole body tensed up, even though I knew I was okay afterwards. My body did not get that memo and it completely shut down ovulation for, you know, delay my ovulation for 2 weeks. So these type of stressors can delay our ovulation. So what's going on in your life right now? So, you know, asking yourself, okay, why am I not ovulating? Well, am I getting enough nutrients? Am I eating enough healthy fats to support my cholesterol levels, my hormone levels? Am I practicing self-care? Am I honoring my body? Am I getting enough sleep? Am I sleeping? Am I drinking enough water? So all of these things are things to ask. Now, when you get your chart, and typically what you were describing earlier, when you see like it's about to, you know, the temperature goes up and then it goes down and it looks like you're about to ovulate over and over, that generally looks like a chart for someone who has polycystic ovarian syndrome. Because what happens in PCOS, a lot of times women experience these LH surges throughout the month. So it's like their ovaries are getting ready to release an egg and they want to, and they're about to get there, but they never cross the finish line. And it can be really, really frustrating, especially to see these charts like this. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe like on day 50, they ovulate and it's very sporadic. So women with PCOS generally do ovulate, but they just don't ovulate as much as other women who have the, you know, once a month ovulation, which especially for women with PCOS can be, you know, if they're trying to get pregnant, they have fewer chances every year to get pregnant unless they practice some diet and lifestyle changes and start ovulating more, but that's a whole nother podcast. So, so that is one of the things that can impede ovulation just all around. I think stress, nutrient deficiencies, practicing the keto diet for too long, perhaps not getting enough carbs. We need at least 150 grams, somewhere around there. You know, it might not be 150, for every woman. Some women, it could be 100, some could be maybe 200. It's just finding, you know, that's one beautiful thing about charting your cycles is journaling your diet, Okay. It's like, I'm not ovulating. What happened? Well, maybe I started the keto diet, you know, 6 weeks ago and now all of a sudden I'm not ovulating. Okay. Well, let me increase my carb uptake to like, maybe like, you know, 75 grams. Well, if you're still not ovulating, going up to 100 grams, and then that could be the sweet spot. You can start ovulating.
I love that you mentioned that too. And it like your cycle, like again, like it's another thing where if you're trying, maybe you switch up your food, like you were just saying, right? Like maybe you switch up your diet, or you try something new, see how your cycle responds. That's like a really, cause it's, yes, sometimes it's hard to know, like, is this working for me? Cause it like, you know, nutrition is such a long-term game. It's not like a quick fix type deal. So I think tracking your cycles along with that and like making note of food changes. And also thinking about, you know, if you've changed your exercise, I think that's a big one. Some women, like it's exercise is so important for our bodies and our hormones and our muscles and our metabolism, but you can easily overdo it. And I think we have so many messages as women of like, you know, like do Orange Theory and it, I just can't, I just Orange Theory. And like, I did CrossFit for 10 years, 9 years. And I used to compete in it. And like, I'm very lucky that I still had pretty good cycles, but I also am a dietitian. So I was being so careful with my food and my nutrition and my supplementation. And I was really good with my recovery because I understood, you know, stress, our sympathetic nervous system activation versus like that relaxed state that you're talking about with like Ashtanga yoga and stuff like that. So I think, you know, exercise can impact your cycle and it can also increase your carbohydrate need. So being smart with that, using your cycle to do that. And one thing I did want to ask you about is like, cause I know you mentioned like if you have low body fat and how that can be like a stressor on the body and like tell it that it's not like a safe time to ovulate. What about women that are overweight and under eating?
So overweight and under eating, I mean, your metabolism can still slow down. So that can cause you to not ovulate as well. If your body's, you know, if your thyroid is not nourished, it can cause, you know, hypothyroidism is one cause of not ovulating. Mm-hmm. So if you're overweight and under eating, that is not going to cause you to lose weight. That's going to slow down your metabolism even more. So that's like throwing fuel on the fire.
Yeah. And I think that can be like some of the hard things, because I think historically, like, and I even have this book, it's like called like No Period Now What? And it's all about, you know, why women lose their cycles. And it's a great book. But it does, I feel like it doesn't quite, it focuses so much on like athletes. And I just feel like, yeah, like I see that a lot, but I see way more often women that are, maybe they feel like they have a lot of weight to lose and they're like, there's no possible way I need that much food. I need to lose weight, you know? So that's why I was like,
well, going back to that, cause I can relate with this, you know, I was there, I was overweight and under eating, you know, I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it was just such a struggle always just up and down with the yo-yo dieting and with, the weight gain. And it wasn't until I started eating healthy fats, like, you know, we all went through like the fat free craze and then everything. It wasn't until I started eating more fats than ever before, healthy fats, not just any fat, that I started losing weight. And that's because, you know, as women with PCOS, we're very prone to blood sugar instability. And that is the number one place to go to for anyone, any woman, whether you have PCOS, endometriosis, or, you know, it doesn't matter. Whatever hormone imbalance, or even you need to balance your blood sugar. Like that is the number. And I think you definitely agree with this, Amanda. I know you've talked about this. The number one place we have to start is balancing our blood sugar. And so when I started eating more healthy fats, my blood sugar was regulated. I didn't get hangry anymore. I saw a meme the other day talking about, it was like, oh, you know, my soulmate is the one who can handle me when I'm hangry. And I'm like, yeah, that's funny, but you should never be hangry. We should get to a place, you shouldn't have to feel like turn into, you know, Dr. Jekyll when you are hungry. You know, your food should be sustaining you for 3 to 5 hours and your mood should be regulated. You should have energy. And then when you eat again, it's in, you know, it's not like a desperate measure where you have to eat. But that is definitely number one, especially with anyone overweight or underweight. There are people underweight or, you know, normal weight that still have blood sugar instability.
Yeah. And I think that's like kind of like a myth. And even with PCOS, which is like you're kind of talking about, it's like you can have that whether you're a healthy weight, underweight, or overweight.
Yes.
Anyone can have hormonal imbalances, even someone with a six pack. Okay. Like they, even if they get their periods, like they, or they could be irregular, maybe they don't get them, maybe they do. It really like your health is just not your outside appearance. Like it's really not, especially not your hormone health. And I love that you mentioned like the blood sugar thing, like that it's huge. And anyone, yeah. like any person, even if it's like me, if I go from being really healthy to like under eating, I will notice changes in my blood sugar, in like my energy levels, you know, in my periods. So again, like tracking all this stuff, like it can help you know, is your diet right for you? Is your exercise routine right for you? Do you need more self-care? Like all those awesome things that like you just mentioned. So I love that. I hope that this has helped women understand ovulation. I hope we didn't confuse you. We did mention a bunch of resources like the fifth vital sign, taking charge of your fertility, Flow period tracker, Kundara period tracker, Daisy, those free charts online, like dive into all that stuff. If you want to learn more, you can definitely start doing this on your own. You can always work with a practitioner. And like, we love that, especially if you think you have imbalances. Anything that you want to leave people with?
Yeah. Just one thing about ovulation, ovulation isn't only important if you want to have a baby. It's not just about being fertile. We always want to be fertile. So you want to ovulate so you can have energy, so you can have a healthy thyroid, so you can be calm, so you can be balanced, have a balanced mood, and beat PMS. So generally when women come in with really bad PMS symptoms like swollen breasts or moodiness, or migraines, it's a progesterone deficiency is oftentimes at play. So this is something you want. It's free. You make it. You don't have to supplement with it. I mean, some women might for different hormone imbalances, but it's something that we all want to be making. No matter where we are in our life, no matter, you know, how old we are, or if we want babies or if we don't want babies, it doesn't matter.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And that's why we're talking about this, because ovulation is important for every woman, no matter what. And it's something that we all have access to learning about. And I think that's the cool part. So hopefully this inspired some people to dive in more. Where can people find you?
Yes, you can find me at jennalongoria.com. And I am on Instagram at jennalongoriahealth.com. And you can check out my, I have a free guide to pain-free periods if you head on over to my Instagram or to my website, and you can get that ebook to your inbox. And I give some great tips on how to get pain-free periods. And also the tips in there will help you with ovulation as well.
Yes, because periods are important because ovulation is important.
Yes.
definitely download the book. Jenna is very smart. I love everything that she does online. She's just like a really sweet person too. And I can't wait to be back in Texas so we can hang out.
Thanks, Amanda. I know. Can't wait.